quibbling. In case you didn't hear it there, Esau and Jacob didn't like each other. Before they were born, they fought. When they were being born, they fought. Jacob came out grabbing Esau's heel. And their parents didn't treat them equally. They lived their lives in a state of conflict. Jacob schemed to get the better of Esau. And one day he did. Esau traded his birthright for, what was it? Bread and lentil stew. I feel a connection sometimes with Esau. He worked hard. I think he was honest. And likely he was a very kind man. And I have a completely opposite feeling for Jacob. He schemed. He was dishonest. He was sneaky. I don't like the conflict. I don't like the sneakiness. I don't like this beginning of the story of Jacob and Esau. And even though I feel a connection with Esau, I know that I have and likely will again act like Jacob. And I'm glad that this part here isn't the end of the story. Not sure how we apply this story, except we got to go further in the story. So here's some more of the story. It didn't end up with a scheming and dishonest and sneaky Jacob. You remember Steve Case, the brilliant writer friend of mine? Well, he wrote about Jacob, too, in his book, God Up Close. So it comes from the Bible, the whole story. But here's what Steve says about this and some other stories in the book. He says, dramatized? Sure. Real? Absolutely. All of the words you can use to describe God, distance isn't one of them. God is here, now, above, below, beneath, beside, behind, before, within, embracing, inspiring, encompassing, pouring, enveloping. So we're going to hear about Jacob's up-close encounter with God. Jacob squatted quietly by the fire. Yesterday the camp was alive, and one of his wives was constantly shooing one of his many children away from the fire. Well, away from him, actually. All of his wives knew to keep the children away when he got like this. He loved his children with all his heart. He loved them as much as he loved anything. But when they were rambunctious and full of vinegar, he would snap at them and they would cry. Then he would hold them and whisper gently, "It's okay. Daddy's sorry." Until one of their mothers came and shooed them away. This is what the camp was like when he was thinking about things, when he was deep in himself. Now he had sent the entire camp, his wives, his children, the servants, the animals, away. They had taken the tents and left him alone by the fire with his bedroll. With a stick he poked at the wood and the flames. It wasn't worry that kept him awake, and it wasn't the fear that his brother could very well kill him tomorrow. It was the thought of facing his brother in the first place, the brother whom he had cheated out of the family inheritance, the brother whom he had left behind to care for the family business while he took all the money and ran, Esau. He thought of his brother almost every day. He thought of the shouting his brother had done at the top of the mountain when he realized not only the money was gone, but so was Jacob. His brother was a big man. He had been a big boy. When they were children, their mother used to say that they had even fought with each other in her belly, and she had to sing to them to get them to calm down and let her rest. As boys, Esau was always stronger, faster. He used to push Jacob down and throw rotten fruit at him. His aim was perfect. It was merciless. When he was 8, Esau brought home animals for their mother to cook. It was usually some bird or deer that Esau had simply beamed with a rock and then run up and broken its neck. Their father Isaac would laugh and put his hand on his brother's shoulder and say he was proud of his firstborn. Firstborn by mere minutes. But that was the way of their people. Firstborn was firstborn. Esau would look at him and he would smile. Jacob grew to hate the looks his brother gave him. First it was just one of annoyance, and then it became one of deep hatred. So Jacob had done what he had done. He had run away and started a life. Then the voice of God came to him and told him he had to go home. He had to heal this rift with his brother. He had to atone, amend, and apologize. Now, just leaving all of his wives and children, that was an event, especially after what Rachel had done. Now they had gone ahead with gifts for Esau. Word had already come back that Esau had gathered an army of 400 men and would be standing at the end of the field where they had played as children. Tomorrow Jacob would walk into that field alone. He would kneel before his older brother and he would beg his forgiveness. But now he would squat here by the fire, poke the flames, and think. He was not the young man who had spent all his time studying. He was not the young man whom, with the help of his own mother, deceived his father and cheated his brother. That man was gone. That man was someone else. These years of working for his father-in-law had made him into someone else. So Jacob was so deep in thought that he did not hear the stranger arrive. The stranger was so silent that Jacob didn't know he was even there until he saw the man sitting on his haunches with his arms resting on his knee as Jacob was staring into the flames. The man looked up just as Jacob did. Their eyes met and the man seemed to smile, but Jacob wasn't sure. The stranger tilted his head the way a child does when he's trying to ponder a flower or a strange new animal. The man across the fire had no beard. He had no lines on his face. Jacob would have guessed him to be no more than a teenager, but for the sheer size of him, he was bigger than he remembered Esau being. Jacob slowly moved his hand from his knee to the handle of his scabbard tied to his belt. And the stranger smiled a little more, as if he knew exactly what Jacob was doing. The man's teeth were white and perfect. And it was now that Jacob saw the man's face. The fire reflected in his eyes in a way that fascinated and disturbed Jacob down to his soul. The hair that spilled down from beneath its turban was pure white. His clothes were the same as any other man's, but Jacob saw that they were clean. Not clean, new. It was as if this perfect man did not exist and then suddenly came into being right at this instant. Jacob had long ago stopped being surprised by things that happened in his life. perhaps it wasn't that he was not surprised. It was that when these things happened, he simply understood that these things happened. He was no longer easily upset. "Who are you?" Jacob asked. This man, the new man that was squatting by the fire across from him, simply continued to smile and tilted his head to the other side as if he were apprising him. "Who are you?" Jacob asked again, and still there was no answer. The man's eyes glistened in the firelight. Well, Jacob had had enough. He was cold, he was tired, he had spent the last few days packing up his wives and children and had sent them away. He had spent his last few days picturing the many ways in which his older brother might kill him. And now some alabaster-faced man-child was playing games with him in the middle of the night. That was just too much. Jacob stood and started to withdraw the scabbard from its sheath. But before he could withdraw anything, the man across the fire was on his feet, leaping over the flames at Jacob. He put two marble white hands on Jacob's shoulders and forced him to the ground. Jacob went down on his back hard. The knife tumbled away from him and out of range of the fire's glow. Jacob stood and gained his balance. The stranger was gone. Jacob stood still, listening the way he did when he and his brother used to play hiding games as boys. Esau was too big and too dense to just be quiet, and Jacob always found him immediately. Now Jacob listened, but he didn't hear the man who came from his side to push him to the ground again before rolling away and disappearing into the dark. And when the man leapt out of the darkness a third time and into the firelight, Jacob nearly shouted. This man had wings. Wings. Greater than those of a hawk. Longer than the tent he shared with Rachel. Wider than his camels when they stood by side. The stranger had wings. So Jacob stood in awe as the stranger dropped from the dark and shoved him to the ground yet again. This time Jacob landed on his back and all the air was forced from his lungs. He gasped, trying to breathe, but it seemed all he could do was breathe out. Finally his lungs settled and he began to breathe again normally. The stranger stepped out of the darkness and into the light of the fire. The wings were tucked behind him now, but Jacob could see that they were still higher than the giant man's head. Jacob looked the stranger in the eye and held out his hand to be lifted up. The stranger stepped forward and grabbed Jacob's hand. Jacob yanked the man forward and planted both his feet on the wingman's ribcage. And in one smooth motion, he rolled back and shoved the man with both feet backward. Over his head, Jacob let go of his hand, and the stranger landed far enough away from the dying fire so that it didn't illuminate him. And then Jacob heard him laugh. And it wasn't an evil laugh. It was more like a child's laugh coming from a man's throat. The stranger was having fun. "Who are you?" Jacob shouted in the dark. But the question was moot. Jacob already knew that he was in the presence of one of God's messengers. And this one liked to wrestle. Jacob knew that as long as he stood in the light of the fire, he was at a disadvantage. He was the only one who could be seen. was time to make things a little more equal. So Jacob scooped up two handfuls of sand and tossed them onto the flames, and the dark was almost instantaneous. This is how God answers my prayers, Jacob said to the dark. Then he heard the steps. He heard the flap of wings that lifted the stranger into the air when the sound of his footsteps stopped. Jacob was not caught by surprise. He felt the front of the angel's new robe and pulled them both to the ground. And they wrestled. They wrestled this way until the sun began to break over the horizon. They both turned and looked at the growing light. In the dim, Jacob was able to grab the angel and force him to the ground. He put a knee on the being's chest and pinned him there. The being spoke for the first time. "It is done. I must go." Jacob looked at him. He had beaten an angel, but the angel had no blood on him. His clothes were still new, and Jacob could taste his own blood in the dirt on his mouth. But he had beaten one of God's own angels. "My God has sent you to me with a blessing. You will give it to me now." The angel smiled. Jacob grabbed him by the front of his tunic and yanked him forward so that they were nearly touching noses. "You will give me my blessing." The angel said, "What's your name?" "My name is Jacob." The angel reached out, and with no more than a man picks a blade of grass, he touched Jacob's hips with his hip, with his finger, and pushed the bone out of the socket. Jacob howled in pain and fell forward. The stranger pushed off him and let him roll into his back. Screaming at the searing pain that now covered his entire side, Jacob clutched at his own hip and tried to pound the bone back into place. The sun was beyond breaking over the horizon, and Jacob looked up and saw the face of the angel clearly for the first time. "Who are you?" he said. The angel bent low and said, "Why would you want to know my name?" He put his hands on Jacob's face and brushed the sweaty, filthy hair from his eyes. Jacob met the angel's eyes, and in that moment there was no pain. The angel said, "You have wrestled enough. It's time to go home. This is God's blessing. Your name is no longer Jacob. From this moment, you are Israel." With that, the angel was gone and the searing pain returned. Jacob, now Israel, screamed again as if the injury were happening all over again. He pounded on the bone that was visible through his own robe, and on the third try, he felt the bone slide back into its socket. The intense, blinding pain subsided and became a dull ache. It embedded itself deep inside Jacob's hip. It was a pain he would feel for the rest of his life. Lying on his back in the dirt, Jacob waited until he was sure the sun was fully up before he rolled onto his stomach. He crawled until he was on all fours, and then he stood. The first step sent a pain from his bruised hip to his entire body. The second step was easier than the next. He limped toward the horizon. His name was Israel, and last night he wrestled with an angel of God. Today, he would meet his brother again, who would probably kill him and take his wife and children and all his treasure. Nothing surprised him anymore. Have you ever gone without speaking to someone? How long? We can all hold grudges. How does it feel though when someone's holding that grudge against you? And what if the grudge is deserved? The ancient Jews believed that different parts of the body controlled different emotions. Love, for example, was carried and controlled by the abdomen. Ever felt that squishy feeling in your stomach when you fall for someone? Or you feel sick to your stomach when you break up? It was believed that the pelvic area was the center of pride. Yes, you can make that analogy that you're thinking right now. It's legit. Right from the Bible. Right from ancient Hebrew thinking. After wrestling with the angel dislocated Jacob's hip bone, his pride. Jacob could not have gone to meet his brother as the man he was. He had to have his pride dislocated in order to go any further. We have broken relationships in our lives. Friends we used to have. Old fights that get buried deep in our souls, but are never resolved. Jacob had his pride dislocated. It happens so he could become a better person. God wants us to be better people, and we do have to make an effort. Jacob wrestled with this angel all night, and wrestling is the opposite of panic. If you're wrestling with an issue, it means you recognize that the outcome is important. Don't make important decisions in a panic. Instead, don't be afraid to wrestle with decisions. Take a step to mend a broken relationship. Offer friendship to someone you haven't been in close contact with. Suck up your pride. Let your pride be dislocated and apologize for hurting someone. Make an effort to make things better. All of us act like Jacob did. All of us act like Esau did. And God is a God who loves restored relationships. And God is a God of grace and forgiveness and unconditional love. A God of dislocated pride. A lot of people want to take the story of Jacob and Esau and see the historic anger between those two and put them into the historic conflict in Israel and Palestine. There's something legitimate there, but you can't boil down a long time hatred, a long time distrust, a long time anger, and just put it on two brothers. There's a lot of thoughts, opinions, strong ideas about rockets being fired back and forth, about homelands, about who gets to be where, about who is the wrong, who is the right, who is wronger, who is righter. Violence and retaliation and retribution do not bring about peace. May we all be a people who seek to be not just peace givers and peace keepers, peace initiators, peace lovers. In the end of this story, even though the conflict continued later, Jacob and Esau made up. They found a way through whatever it was. And they embraced one another. Embracing one another doesn't fix everything. Embracing one another doesn't make the problems go away. But embracing one another is a beginning. It's a beginning to peace. It's a beginning to a world where everyone respects the dignity of everyone else. No need to be at all sneaky. Amen.